This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply,
it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Today's show is going to present some really, really interesting information, especially for those of you who spend a lot of time, effort, and thought about caring for your skin and keeping your skin looking youthful. We're going to talk about the effects of exercise on skin aging during the first hour. Then we will be joined during the second hour by Adele Moussa to perform a Subversity three-part series. This is the first installment of Common Nutrient Deficiencies, Their Health Consequences, and How You Can Fix Them. So you're going to want to listen to the entire show today, I can promise you. First, we're joined by Dr. Mark Tonopolsky. How are you doing, Dr. Tonopolsky?
I'm well, thanks.
First of all, what made your group even look at the effects of exercise on skin? Because it seems to me that we know skin, that exercise has so many benefits, and probably the least understood is probably skin, right?
Sure. So, as you pointed out, people have known for many years that exercise has benefits in multiple systems. For example, dementia, cardiovascular disease, bone health, various other systems are affected favorably by exercise. So we did a study that was published in 2011 where we looked at a mouse model that was a premature model of aging. So these mice would age very rapidly, and by about a year they were showing all of the signs of human aging, including gray fur, hair loss, thinning of the skin, brain atrophy, anemia, and all the things that we associate with human aging. So we expose those mice.
Is that similar to the human disease progeria?
Essentially, yes, that's a very good point. So progeria is an accelerated aging process in humans. So these mice had a progerioid form of aging, so they would age more rapidly. But they shared all of the features that we see in an older adult. As I was mentioning, gray fur, thinning of the hair, thinning of the skin, anemia, and all of these sort of things. So what we did is we exposed these animals to a running program 3 times a week for 45 minutes. And at the end of the exercise program, which lasted for 5 months, we noted, which was so strikingly obvious, that the normally gray fur in these animals was black. It was completely normal. And their skin didn't have the thin, wrinkled appearance. The skin looked normal. So based on that, we decided to do biopsies of the skin in these animals and take a closer look and then try to see whether this process was occurring also in humans.
Now, we know that the little mice, the dose response is different than humans. So in little mice, 3 times a week, 45 minutes for 5 months, I would imagine that a human would have to do a bit more exercise to see some of these same results, right?
Well, we tailored the exercise to represent what most humans could do, and that was 45 minutes at 70 to 75% of their VO2 max.
Okay.
So it was a fairly intense running program, but we actually have a machine that will measure VO2 in the animals, so we could scale it to as a relative percentage of their VO2 max. But from a mouse aging perspective, what we did essentially is expose them with, you know, a little bit of envelope calculation from about age 20 to about age 55. That would be about the same human equivalent for the 5 months duration of exercise.
Interesting.
And found these benefits.
Okay. All right, so now the direct effect, or was there an intrinsic and extrinsic effect of this type of exercise? We're talking about aerobic exercise here because we know that resistance training has an effect on skeletal muscle protein synthetic response and so on. And we understand the value of muscle as an organ. But when we talk about the effects of skin, Was there an intrinsic and extrinsic effect of cardiovascular training on skin, or was there just one pathway that it seemed to work?
Well, it's a complex question. I mean, first of all, just the observation in the mice, we found that the normal aging process in these mice led to a very, very thin skin. So as we age as humans, the dermis, which is the part that contains the collagen, tends to thin, and then the outer part, called the stratum corneum, tends to thicken and get flaky. And that's why older adults have wrinkles, thin, so as my daughter calls it, sloppy skin,
right,
and sort of a dry appearance. And that was completely prevented in the animals. So it raises the question, was this something that was produced by muscle or some other organ during the exercise process, or is it something, for example, just increased blood flow,
right,
increased heat, and these sort of things.
Because now, we know when you do cardiovascular training, especially at a moderate to high VO2 max, there's a phenomenon called vascular density, where peripheral vasculature that doesn't necessarily open up and receive a lot of blood flow opens up and receives a lot of blood flow, and we get, and part of that is to help dissipate body heat. Part of it is just to kind of irrigate the body. So could that have been it? Just the increase in blood flow to areas that normally aren't well irrigated?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that that's probably a factor. However, what we believe is that that's not the main factor.
Okay.
So what we did is we've done some other experiments, which we haven't published yet, with mice that we put them essentially in a sauna, so that we could heat them up so that they had this similar body temperature, and actually it was a bit higher even than what happens with normal exercise,
sure,
so that they would get this vasodilatation and they would start sweating, and also the effect of heat itself activates various heat shock proteins.
Right.
We thought maybe they were having a beneficial effect on the mitochondria in the skin. But we didn't see the same effects with heating alone, so we don't think that it's just a passive, extrinsic sort of a process.
So we
then look towards the intrinsic processes, which we can talk about.
Well, now we've been talking a lot. I mean, we've been talking about the mitochondrial theory of aging ongoing on this show for a long time, and even this week more recently about the contribution of phospholipid to mitochondrial membrane and its ability to then produce ATP and so on. So let's talk about that. So this type of exercise had a direct effect on mitochondria, correct?
Exactly. And in fact, the model that we use of progerioid aging in the mice is one of mitochondrial dysfunction.
Mm.
So we knock in mitochondrial dysfunction to then get this accelerated aging process. And then with exercise in those mice, we prevented the effects on skin. And in fact, every organ that we looked at, including cataracts, hearing loss, heart hypertrophy, anemia, et cetera, everything was protected essentially in these mice with exercise.
You know what's funny? You talk about heart hypertrophy. I have a friend who's a nurse, and one time she said to me, you can become a cardiac cripple. And I've read some really, really good books about heart failure. And the interesting thing about a lot of the studies is they're compared to the gold standard, which is chronic exercise. When they take rats, for instance, and clamp their aorta so that they get a lot of back pressure and develop hypertrophy and myopathies in the heart, these are often reversed completely after chronic exercise. And with little rats, they drop them in water and let them swim for their lives. And quite often, pathological changes in the heart, fibrotic buildup, restructures and remodels and becomes physiological changes. The heart becomes healthy again. So, you know, it when we talk about things like exercise and its effects on skin, we really shouldn't be surprised, because we really are, when we look at the evolutionary gifts that we've been given, we are designed to output a lot of energy and be very active as a species, are we not?
Exactly. You know, and there is evolutionary theory that our ability to complete endurance exercise, and to do that, we have to dissipate heat through our skin. And so if a muscle is contracting to track down an impala or whatever we're going after in the plains of Africa as we evolved hundreds of thousands of years ago, it would make sense that signals would come from the muscle or other contracting proteins that would then signal to other organs for them to adapt favorably.
Mm-hmm.
So, if, for example, if you're running for 6 hours, it would make sense that you would want to have something that was causing both skin health to protect protect you from the deleterious effects of the sun, as well as to dissipate heat. The best way to do that is to promote sweating and blood flow to the skin. So it's when you really think about it, and I like that evolutionary perspective, it makes a lot of sense that it's more than just our muscle that it's adapting to exercise, that it's a multi-systemic benefit, which was clearly found in our PNAS paper that was in 2011 with the mice.
And you know, for those, and we have to take a break, but since you said the word perspiring, one of the things that gave us evolutionary advantage was our ability to perspire. Before we hunted with weapons, we did something called persistence hunting. And some of you heard me mention this before. But we were able to chase an animal until the animal died of heat exhaustion because it could not perspire the way we did. And so
exactly.
It makes perfect sense that you have to exercise the perspiration process. It's one of our evolutionary gifts.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Look, we have to take a break. I've got lots more questions. This is really going to be an interesting discussion, especially for the women out there. I know a lot of us guys don't take our skin as seriously as women. And women spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month trying to get their skin to look better when the answer may just be to change the way you exercise. We're talking right now with Dr. Mark Tanapolsky from McMaster's University. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Throw away those muscle-building rag mags and listen to real health information you can trust.
So right now what's trending is like resistance exercise, CrossFit. So he's like, well, I'm going to write an article that will make all of those people go, what? There are people out there who are trying to convince themselves that heavy resistance training is not good for you. They want to be substantiated by why they don't go into the gym and do any kind of work. In order for you to get rhabdomyolysis, you have to be an extremely well-trained athlete who pushes your body beyond the point of no return. And even then you may not get rhabdo.
Only on Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
They couldn't get rhabdo if I said, get rhabdo and I'll give you $1 million.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
It's new, it's cutting edge, and it's custom made to get you to Gainesville. The Blueprint Meteoric is here. Meteoric is the final frontier for drug-free athletes. Includes brand new breakthrough information about triphasic energy system training and macronutrient cycling. Specifically designed to transform your physique and record time. For a limited time, get the Blueprint Meteoric for free, along with the legendary add 1 inch to your upper arms in a single workout when you subscribe to the Blueprint Bulletin. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Blueprint banner ad.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to gum disease. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
By now, everyone knows I'm a big proponent of dairy. But as we all know, not all dairy is created equal. Learn more about a form of dairy made available to us that is raw, organic, grass-fed, grass-finished, low-heat pasteurized, and cultured with probiotics, without the offensive beta-casein protein believed to be 13 times more toxic than gluten. Check out superhumandairy.com to learn more, or go to superhumanradio.com and click the green-fed dairy banner ad today.
Superhumans using Percova Extra Edge Colostrum Powder are experiencing dramatic improvements in strength, performance, recovery, and endurance, benefits that cannot be duplicated by any other supplement. Percova Extra Edge Colostrum Powder will take your game to another level. If you already know how great Percova Extra Edge Colostrum is, you could purchase 4 jars of Extra Edge Colostrum Powder for $200. Use coupon code SHR2. See the Percova banner ad on superhumanradio.com today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very superstitious. Very superstitious about all the money women spend on cosmetic products to make their skin look better and younger, when the answer is just exercise. And really, all those products out there are just going to mask the aging of your skin. They're not going to revive the skin the way exercise does. So let's talk more about this research. When we looked at the biopsies, did you see a greater degree of mitochondrial biogenesis after exercise?
Yeah, so essentially, following up on our mouse stuff, we wanted to ask the question, is this present in humans or not? So what we did is took close to 100 individuals where we did biopsies from the skin of a non-sun-exposed area. So it was the upper quadrant of the buttocks area. And we had half men, half women. Half of the individuals were very well-trained endurance athletes. So they'd been doing triathlons, running, these type of activities for more than 10 years. So these were so-called masters athletes. And our range was 20-year-old to 86. So what we did is, from these biopsies, we looked under the microscope to look at some of the signs of aging that we know happen at the microscopic level. One of them, as I mentioned before, is thinning of the dermis,
right,
which leads to this sort of sagging, sloppy skin, wrinkles, etc. And the other is this thickening of the outer coating, which gives you the dryish appearance to skin. So what we found, if we looked at all comers, when we compared the sedentary to the athletic folks, is the athletic folks had a thicker dermis and a thinner stratum corneum, or outer part of the skin. And again, it's cross-sectional, but it was certainly of interest, and from what I can see in the literature, it's the first time that was actually seen. And perhaps the reason why people weren't looking is that if you look at the face of top sport runners and cyclists, you say, well, their skin doesn't look that much better than anyone else, and if anything, they've got maybe more wrinkles. What people fail to remember is the negative effects of sun. And so what happens is, most people who are sedentary tend not to be outside as much.
Uh-huh.
They tend to be inside. Whereas you're a cyclist, you're outside in the sun, or a triathlete for, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours. So really, what our data is showing is that there are benefits to the skin, but it was kind of masked or unappreciated because of the negative effects of sun, which you're always fighting against. You know, it's a yin and yang, the benefits of exercise, but the negative effects of sun. So really, I think what our data is showing is exercise does benefit the skin. However, we've got to be careful to also protect against the effects of sun while we're outside doing the exercise that we enjoy.
Interesting. So let's get back to the mitochondria just for a second.
Sure.
We know that intense exercise increases both the size and the density of mitochondria in mm-hmm. muscle tissue. Do we see anything similar in skin?
Yes, certainly. You know, we've done that work in the mouse model. There's no question that that was the case. If we look at the skin, we do find that there's a greater mitochondrial capacity in those who are active versus those who are sedentary. And then we went on to ask the question, which is the next logical extension. That was a cross-sectional study. Maybe there were nutritional factors or other genetic factors that made the athletes look better, and it had nothing to do with exercise.
Right.
So we took a group of folks who were over the age of 65, and we exposed them to an exercise program just twice per week, starting at 30 minutes and then ramping them up to about 70% of VO2 max for 45 minutes, and then did the biopsy of their buttock region, again, non-sun exposed area, before and after 3 months of that training. And what we found, which was a little surprising, was a very similar result, and that is that the dermis thickened over that three-month period, and the epidermis, the outer part of the skin, actually thinned out a bit, and it was statistically significant. So it looked, I mean, it's kind of hand-waving, but it was almost a 30-year euthanizing of the skin that we saw.
Now, some of the research done on cellulite indicates that cellulite occurs not just because of subcutaneous fat, but also a thinning of the skin. And some of the therapies used to treat cellulite, some of the most successful therapies, incorporate real vitamin A, retinol, and its effect on increasing stem cell proliferation and thus collagen production and rejuvenating the thickening of the portion of the skin that you want to become thicker. And so is there any evidence that stem cell availability influences, mitochondrial availability influences stem cell proliferation?
Yeah, it's a complicated area, and we haven't published all of that data, but definitely with our model, if you will, of mitochondrial dysfunction, the POLG mice, there definitely is stem cell dysfunction, stem cell exhaustion, and with the increase in mitochondrial function that accompanies the endurance exercise, we definitely see a rejuvenation of the capacity of those stem cells to rejuvenate. So that's definitely a very interesting area of research that we're embarking on now, because we know for sure the mitochondria are better. The specific cell types and whether the things like telomeres are lengthened in the stem cells and whether there's stem cell rejuvenation in the skin. We haven't published that stuff yet, but it's a great question and definitely something that we think is very plausible and likely to be a factor.
Yeah, because there is research out there now that shows that telomeres either stop shortening or maybe even have the ability to increase slightly when individuals exercise intensely. So obviously that plays out once again. Now, those out there, Dr. Aubrey de Grey has been on the show in the past, and he and I have had the opportunity to talk in person when he was here in Louisville one time at a lecture. And he's of the opinion that exercise is not a good thing because he looks exclusively at oxidative stress, oxidation, and he feels that oxidation is what promotes aging, and that the more you use the mitochondria, the more it produces free radicals, and hence the worse off you are. But it appears that in your study, as well as the more recent one about the benefits of phospholipids derived from cholesterol, that when the mitochondria is put into an optimal position for greater biogenesis, it also seems to respond better to oxidative stress. That was shown in yours as well. Didn't these mitochondria actually work more efficiently and so produce less free radicals?
Sure. I mean, I don't want to say anything negative against an individual, but I would completely disagree with.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that. Yeah, I've had this discussion with them, too. So.
No, it's absolutely erroneous. If one looks at the epidemiology, if that were the case, people who exercise should have shortened lifespan and should show more visible and measurable signs of aging, which is not true. We know for sure from excellent work from the Cooper Institute and various other studies. There was a great study out of Stanford which looked at runners versus non-runners. All of these studies clearly show an extension of lifespan upwards of 4 to 6 years, depending on your obesity profile. But there's no question that exercise extends lifespan. There's no question that it reduces all-cause mortality. It reduces a variety of different comorbidities. So if exercise truly was producing free radicals in excess, which then were responsible for these pathologies, it just doesn't make sense with what we know is true based on innumerable epidemiology studies. Now, when we start looking at why that might be the case, one of my former graduate students, Johnny Parisi, published some work back in the 2005-2006 time period where we looked at older adults who did weight training. These individuals trained three times a week lifting weights for 4 months, or twice a week lifting weights for 6 months. In both studies, what we showed is that oxidative stress, which was higher in the older adults versus young people before they started training, that oxidative stress was lower after they were training. Now, you might say, well, how could you reduce oxidative stress? Because we're increasing the flux through the mitochondria. There's a little bit of damage and repair. So, of course, there should be higher oxidative stress. Yes, that is the case early on in the training. But what people fail to realize is that the human body is incredibly adaptive.
Yes.
And it responds to stress to endogenously upregulate our ability to deal with that stress. So what we showed is three different markers, both DNA markers, lipid markers, and protein markers of oxidative stress were lower following training. And the reason for that is the training led to the induction or the increase in our body's ability to deal with the reactive oxygen species by increasing antioxidant enzymes.
I was just going to say, what we know that if you look at intense training, it upregulates glutathione. As you point out, the body is very adaptive. It knows, hey, if we're going to get regular exposure to this kind of work, we need to adjust. And the same is true if the body doesn't get exposed to that kind of work. It just produces less glutathione. And chances are you're probably suffering more oxidative stress by not doing anything than you would if you were doing things.
With absolute certainty. I mean, and we've shown that in humans, and that was published in 2005, 2006, and many other people have shown very similar stuff. Risto has shown similar stuff. Radic has shown similar data. So, I mean, that's just so well documented. But I think people fail to read perhaps that literature because it's such an outdated concept to think that exercise is producing excessive free radicals and you're going to end up in worse shape. That just doesn't fit with any bit of science, both epidemiology and more basic science.
Now one caveat before we go into the break. We know that marathon runners, this is one of those things that more is not better. The same way that some people out there think all you need to do is resistance training, and they're wrong. You need to do cardiovascular training too, because they're very, very different systems. More is not better. Just like more is not better in resistance training and you start breaking down joints and so on.
Sure.
There is evidence that those who do extreme long distance running for long periods of time end up with a lot of pathologies like lone atrial fib and even some myopathies. So don't misunderstand this discussion by thinking, oh, I want to reverse my aging till I'm 20. I'm going to run for 6 hours a day. No, that might be a mistake.
Right. I agree 100%. And, you know, I don't want to get personal, but I've had three cardiac ablation surgeries for atrial flutter and fib because I've been one of these individuals who's done extreme trail running, ultra running, et cetera. And granted, there may be a genetic component, but we know from epidemiology that there's a fivefold greater risk of atrial fib in people who do ultra extreme endurance sports. That's a very complex, interesting issue, and maybe after the break we can talk about that.
Sure,
and get back to it.
Yes,
it'll take me a while to get into it.
Yeah, no, I'd like that. Okay, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Keep listening to Superhuman Radio and feel your brain getting stronger by the minute. We'll be right back.
The UK is known for its Queen, Big Ben, and fish and chips. Well, move over. Here's the UK's strongest pro-hormone, Extreme Mass. Extreme Mass will give you a significant amount of muscle and strength, gains of up to 10 kilograms in a four-week cycle. You'll see an increase in libido, vascularity, and aggression. Shatter your personal bests in the gym while on Extreme Mass. Save 10% off. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Extreme Mass banner and use coupon code MASS10.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizol, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizol works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
One-two punch for muscle growth is increased pump and
increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workout the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today. Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. Age Force introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Just a reminder, Age Foss just introduced their new 24/7 allergy relief patch. Save 40%. Go to superhumanradio.com. Click the banner ad for Age Foss. Use the coupon code SHRALLERGY today. We're talking right now with Dr. Mark Tonopolsky. Actually, the subject is changing a little bit because of something that I said. And I also want to mention this, too, real quick before we get into this. The same is true of those who exclusively weight train. If you're not doing cardio, there's eccentric and concentric hypertrophy of the heart. They're both equally important in order to have a good pump. If all you're doing is resistance training, the walls are thickening, the sinuses are getting smaller, and the heart has to pump faster, which can lead to a variation of different types of myopathies as well. So let's talk about those who are over-endurance aggressors. Let's try there.
Sure. So I think with over-endurance exercise, and these are really extreme cases, so I don't want the average person to think that they shouldn't be doing
right.
exercise because of this very rare risk. This is a very select group of individuals. First came out of data in Norway and other Scandinavian countries where some of the top cross-country skiers and orienteers were experiencing a greater than expected risk of atrial fibrillation. There's a variety of things that we think might be happening because it usually comes in the person who's in their 40s and 50s who was a top sport athlete. And it's likely that there's some atrial dilatation that occurs due to the increased volume that's coming back. Through embryological development, it's also felt that there's pieces of the atria that get stuck in the pulmonary veins and they can be sending aberrant signals, which are normally suppressed. But as we get older, these signals can sort of override the normal signal coming from the other side of the heart. And this can lead to fibrillation. So there's a variety of theories. We don't know exactly why this happens, whether there perhaps could be excessive oxidative stress under the extreme cases where we've done stupid things like, 4 days straight adventure racing where you might be nutritionally depleted or dehydrated. When you're pushing extremely hard in a 3 hour, a 4 hour, 50K trail run or something. But whatever the mechanism might be, we know that the epidemiology is there. What I want to get across, however, is that exercise is dose dependent. So essentially, if you look at the epidemiology or the benefits of endurance exercise, exercise. About 70% of the health benefits are realized with an average of 30 minutes of exercise per day.
Right.
So when you get up to an hour of exercise per day, you're reaping most of the beneficial effects of exercise. And what we're dealing with are people who are doing extreme activity, often under periods of dehydration and other stressors. So it's such a small group that I'm not sure we really need to get too much into that. But yes, under that extreme, we might tip the normal physiologically adaptive benefits of exercise into what we would call pathology.
Yeah.
And that's where perhaps there could be too many free radicals, and it's an attractive hypothesis that perhaps that's causing a bit of scarring, some collagen fiber deposition in the atria, which is leading to this propensity for atrial fib. But remember that the vast majority of the benefits and all of the epidemiology clearly show that it's important to exercise, and half an hour is giving you benefits, but an hour a day on average is probably providing the optimal benefit.
And it makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, you take a dragster that's producing 3,000 horsepower. It has to be rebuilt every couple days, every couple runs. They have to rebuild it. So when you take something that's that extreme, someone who is running, I mean, there's people who run cross country. They run for 10 hours a day, you know, and until they get to, and they do this for days on end. I have no accreditation whatsoever. I'm not a scientist, but I've always thought in more simplistic terms. I tend to think that when you are putting your heart to that sort of requirement, upregulation of beat, stroke, and continuously for hours on end, the body is adaptive. So what it does is it increases the nerves responsible for sinus timing from the node that's responsible for creating a pulse. And like anything else, it becomes more sensitive. So when you're running, it's ready for that job. But now when you're idling, you got a misfire. Because you got nerves that have been placed there for collateralization for the heavy load that are kind of doing their own thing when the load isn't so heavy.
Certainly possible. I mean, nobody really knows,
but there
still are theories. I mean, we do know that it's there. It does happen. But I think that's such a small minority of individuals. Ultimately, it starts to get one thinking about, you know, could post-exercise antioxidants potentially be of benefit in that recovery phase when you push yourself too hard? And in theory, there may be some benefit there.
Yeah. What about apoptosis? So we know that apoptosis plays an important role both on helping us avoid certain pathologies like cancers and tumors. But we also know that as mitochondria density and biogenesis it starts to wane, we know that cells stop replacing cells, and apoptosis actually goes in the other direction. It starts happening more rampantly, and so we have tissue that breaks down. Is there evidence that the exercise somehow corrects the apoptotic landscape of the skin?
We haven't done that in skin. We've done that in many of the organs in our original mouse studies, and there's no question that many of the activators of the apoptotic pathway are up in our progerioid mouse, and they are rescued with the endurance exercise. So there's no question that it does have that beneficial effect. We saw that in gonads. We saw it in spleen. We saw it in kidney, pretty much every organ that we looked at. But I don't believe that we've done that yet in skin that we've reported in that study. But in theory, given that we have this multisystemic benefit and we are seeing the improvement in mitochondrial function in skin, both in our mouse model as well as in our top sport athletes and also in our sedentary people who became athletes, I would think it's entirely plausible that would be the case.
Is it realistic for people who are not exercising at all to start doing 3 to 4 45-minute bouts of moderate intensity cardiovascular training, and in the course of just a few months start seeing the benefits? Or does it take years? Since these mice, you know, 5 months to them is years to us, right?
Sure. As I was saying, we took those 65-year-olds, right, and we exercised them in the lab for 3 months. and that was only twice per week. We started off at 50% of VO2 max for 30 minutes, and then we ramped them up to 45 minutes at closer to 70% of VO2 max. So that was only 3 months, and we were able to see the benefits in the skin. So it looks like at least the skin seems to be quite reversible or quite responsive to the beneficial effects of exercise. So I was a little bit surprised that in 3 months we got such substantial benefits from the exercise. Pleasantly surprised.
What about the face? As we point out, the face is the one that receives, the face and the hands receive the most exposure to sunlight, UV rays, and so on throughout our lifespan. Do we see even the face, facial skin improving, or is that probably harder to assess?
Well, it's harder to assess from a practical perspective. Nobody wants me to take a 4-millimeter punch biopsy of their face.
Yeah, right.
So certainly that's one issue. But as I was pointing out before, I think we have these two opposing factors. We have the beneficial effects of exercise, which is making the skin look better, and we have the negative effects of sunlight, which very potently photoages the skin and accelerates the aging process. And that's a real complicated issue. Obviously, our mice are not being exposed. They're exposed to the same light and dark cycle and no UV radiation of significance, and so we're seeing it in the mice when we exercise them. And in the humans, one would have to do the experiment where you had one person training inside their whole life, another person training outside. I'm sure we could probably come up with some scenarios where that might be the case, but based on what we're seeing in the non-sun exposed area, you'd have to extrapolate that to the sun exposed skin, saying that they'd likely be worse off if they were out in the sun without the benefits of exercise.
Uh-huh.
And again, one of the ways one might be able to do that would be to be doing biopsies, for example, of people who were outdoor activities that were very sedentary and those who were doing outdoor activities that were quite vigorous, and seeing if there were differences there. Then you could control for sun exposure. But even that starts to become a challenge because there's so many factors that come into play. Did you put sunscreen on?
Right.
What's the color of your skin to begin with?
Right.
How much melanin do you have there to begin with?
Yeah, because melanin protects, obviously. Those of us who evolved, like myself, our ancestors evolved under the sun, we have very dark skin. And when we get in the sun, we get really, really dark. That's a protective mechanism.
It is indeed. You know, and if one looks at, it's kind of hand waving, but there's no question that black versus white individuals, the white individuals are at much higher risk for skin cancers,
right?
And the quality of the skin in terms of wrinkles, that process has accelerated 10, 15 years in people with extremely fair skin.
Well, and interestingly enough, and we have to take a break here in a moment, but I just watched a documentary about Bob Marley, who I was a huge fan of growing up, of his music, and I never realized, first of all, that his father was white and his mother was black. But more importantly, he died of a white man's disease. He died of melanoma, which the doctors were all baffled because they said, well, you know, black people don't get melanoma. We don't understand why you have melanoma. But it was because his father was white.
Well, the reason is that he had acral melanoma, which is very different.
Essentially,
he had melanoma on his foot, which is not sun exposed, right? So acromelanoma, my wife's a pathologist, so acromelanoma is one that's not associated with sun exposure the same way that the garden variety one is. So,
Poor
Bob.
That explains that. Boy, you learn so much listening to Superhuman Radio. You see, folks, why I tell you to listen to the show? All right, look, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to just talk briefly about the changing of color of the fur of the progeria rodents, because are the hair follicles of rodents similar to those in humans? Stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's interesting what we consider a reason to get angry.
He's a military strategist on health.
Merck, the pharmaceutical company, killed 55,000 people with Vioxx. They knew that it had a problem, and they sold it to people anyway, and 55,000 plus people died taking Vioxx.
He's Carl Lenore.
Why isn't this current administration going, we need to go to White House Station, New Jersey, where the Merck headquarters is, and send the military in there? We need to bomb Merck, because they killed 55,000 Americans knowing that they were going to kill 55,000 Americans.
On Superhuman Radio.
Where is the outrage about that?
Scientists around the world confirm the vital importance of redox signaling to cell health. ASEA is the first and only stable, perfectly balanced mixture of these redox signaling reactive molecules that exist outside of living cells and can be used to help maintain proper balance inside the body to support the immune system, recovery, and the healing process. To learn more about ASEA and what it can do for you, go to superhumanradio.com and click the ASEA banner ad today. Train harder, train longer, recover faster, and elevate protein synthesis. It's finally here, Splice, with branched-chain amino acids, taurine, and trimethylglycine. You'll blast through your workouts without the need for stimulants, and the alpha-lactalbumin ensures your workouts will be the most productive because nothing accelerates muscle growth faster. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Predator Nutrition banner ad and use the coupon code SPLYCE10 to save 10% off today. The key to getting lean and staying lean is insulin control. Wild swings in blood sugar create body fat. How would you like to be able to ensure that more of your meals feed muscle and not fat? Now you can with GlycoSolve. GlycoSolve contains the most potent berberine on the market. It will shuttle glucose to muscle, not fat. Made in the USA in a GMP-certified facility. Save 10% when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to leanerliving.com today.
Health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Later in the show, we're going to be joined by Adele Musa as we start the first installment of a three-part series, Common Nutrient Deficiencies, Their Health Consequences, and How You Can Fix Them. Because those of us who, quote-unquote, watch what we eat or eat healthy, we tend to be at greater risk of certain nutrient deficiencies. And so we're going to address this a little bit later in the show. Right now, we're talking with Dr. Mark Tarnopolsky. We're talking about exercise and its effect on skin quality, skin aging. It sounds to me like it's all good. Ladies, before you go out and buy that $200 cosmetic, maybe you should try hitting the treadmill 3 days a week for a couple months. So the little progeria rats or mice, the color of their coats started to turn from gray back to darker. There's one confounding fact here, that most men who suffer from things related to the scalp, including male pattern baldness, show very, very poor blood flow to the scalp. Over two-thirds of men with male pattern baldness also have a very, very poor blood flow to the scalp. So there's lots of things going on here. But is there any evidence that the follicles in little mice are similar to those in our hair? And if so, can we see a changing of the color of our hair if we start doing more cardio?
Yeah, it's a very good point. It must be remembered that with these mice, what we did is we really prevented the grayness as opposed to reversing it.
Okay.
So what we did is starting the mice at 5 months of age, they really showed no signs of aging. And then what we do is when we're exercising them, you can see that the mice that were sedentary developed the graying and the loss of the fur, whereas the ones that exercised maintained the normal black color. So the darkness that we get in hair, in the fur, in the mice, and the darkness even on our skin is from a pigment called melanin.
Right.
And melanin is made from melanocytes, which are quite rich in mitochondria. So if you have dysfunctional mitochondria, it contributes to the graying process. And that's true in humans as it is in mice and other critters. So improving mitochondrial function is a way that you can try and attenuate or slow down the graying process. But again, it would be very interesting to look at the epidemiology and see whether there's less graying in individuals who are habitually exercising. The challenge, of course, is that there's so many other factors from a genetic perspective which determine whether you turn gray when you're in your 30s or you turn gray when you're in your 70s, that you'd have to have such a huge sample size to really pull that out in a human study, whereas with the mouse study, it was shocking. I mean, and that's what got us going. We were saying, holy geez, look at these mice. The ones that are sedentary look horrible. They're barely moving.
Yeah.
They're gray. They're losing their fur, and their skin looks horrible.
And that's what sets this show apart from all other shows out there that talk about health. We talk about health and longevity on this show, understanding that physical culture is one of the important cornerstones of aging well and being disease-free. We're not saying that you can live forever, but we are saying that when you look at lifelong athletes, they age differently than the general population. And when you look at people who exercise regularly and focus on maintaining levels of activity, they age differently than the rest of the population. So when you go to these other health shows that just talk about the esoteric diet, let's look at the Okinawans. The Okinawans also are active, and the Okinawans also go to sleep when the sun goes down, and they get up in the morning when the sun is up. They're not sitting up all night with their iPads. There's a lot going on when we talk about aging and longevity, but you cannot expect to age well if you are not actively involved in some form of physical culture. The old chicken and egg, do we slow down because we get old, or do we get old because we slow down? I believe it's the latter. We get old because we slow down, and we have control and choices to make to keep us from slowing down. What would you say to those statements, Dr. Tung?
I would agree 100%. I think epidemiology supports that. All of our research supports that. And one has to ask the question, how do you want to spend the last 10 years of your life? Do you want to have sarcopenia or loss of muscle mass, weakness, disabled and institutionalized, or do you want to be out walking and hiking and perhaps still cycling or doing some sort of activity? And we refer to that really as the compression of aging. So let's say for a minute that even though we know that exercise can extend your lifespan by 4 to 6 years, even if it didn't, do you want to spend the last 10 years disabled, weak, unable to get off a toilet or climb stairs, or able to get out and do physical activities that you enjoy? So if you can compress aging and have a very active, enjoyable older life, and then crash and burn one night from a heart attack or whatever might afflict you at that point, still that quality is so important. And there's just no question, I think, that we can compress aging with regular exercise.
And that's a message of this show. 9 years ago when I first started doing the show, for the first 2 years, every show I used to close by saying, muscle is metabolic currency. If you're putting money in the bank for old age, you better be putting muscle on your carcass so that money is not going to an institution to change your diaper and face you towards the television for the last 10 or 15 years of your life. And,
right.
And you know, and the medical orthodoxy has avoided this discussion for a long time, but now they're starting to get it because the research is showing that there was a recent study just published that men who maintain muscle mass to the age 55 and women to the age 65 have a lower death rate from all-cause mortality. And so, you know, and again, it's no mystery why, because we are mismatched for our environment today. We were designed to expend energy. I want to die in the gym. I want to die with the, you know, 600 pounds on my back going down into the hole. That's how I want to go. I don't want to go, or I'd rather die at night, but then I don't want anybody to find me in bed because that's horrible for them. But I don't want to be in an institution facing a wall waiting for somebody to change my diaper. And that is the prognosis of the large majority of the population today.
Exactly. And I'm surprised that governments and others haven't jumped onto this. I mean, I've been preaching this for 25 years, that we really need to get people active. And it has to start in childhood. I mean, I'm a big proponent and I'm a coach of kids running programs and various other things to promote activity, to make it a lifelong endeavor. Again, it's never too late to start, and I don't want to dissuade anyone who's older from starting because we do see the benefits, and I was just talking about 3 months of endurance training does have benefits, but really the benefits that are monumental are those that are conferred by exercise and healthy lifestyle throughout your whole life. An ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure.
Absolutely, and if you're somebody who's listening to this show for the first time and you're saying, you know, I'm not even able to walk up the stairs, you start where you are. If all you can do is increase the time that you stand during the day, then start there. And once you achieve the ability to stand all day, then you can start walking. But you start where you are. This notion, coming back to that statement that this nurse said, there are people who are cardiac cripples. That's nonsense. There are people who are not capable of doing things that they self-assess they should be able to do. But if you start where you are and use progression as your goal, you will end up being healthier. Even if you have a disease today, you will fare better.
Right. I agree with that statement 100%. And that's been shown in studies, too. I mean, Bill Evans' work and Maria Fiadaroni published a very nice paper decades ago showing that folks even as old as 91 who were institutionalized and could barely get out of a chair, when they started a gradually progressive exercise and eventually a weight training program, they had monumental improvements in their function. And people who were wheelchair-bound were actually able to walk in many cases. Which gets to one final point I want to make is,
please,
we've been talking about endurance exercise, and there's no question that there's a lot of benefits from endurance exercise, and we've talked about many of those. But I also want to mention a lot of the work we've done is also with weight training. And I think for optimal aging, we really need a combination of both, because there have been studies that endurance exercise doesn't protect against sarcopenia quite as well as we would like. It does have many benefits, but to maintain that strength, the resistance exercise seems to be a little bit more potent. So really what we're finding in our work is for optimal aging and for many of my patients with various metabolic, genetic, and muscle disorders, it's a combination of endurance and resistance. So, for example, 3 times a week you'd be doing more endurance activity and 3 times a week you'd be doing resistance exercise. And in my heart of hearts, from all of the research, I really think that that's the optimal way in which humans should be exercising to maintain a healthy lifespan.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't ignore one. They're both equally important. This is a great discussion. I got to tell you, I love McMaster University. From the first interview I did with Stu Phillips back in 2007, that university is really doing some great work in exercise physiology and the contributions of exercise to overall health. Great work over there.
Thanks very much. Yeah, no, Stu's a great guy. He was one of my postdocs many years ago.
Is that right? Yeah, very cool. Listen, I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We're going to take one quick commercial break, and when we come back, we will be joined by the brilliant Adel Moussa, long awaited to have him back on the show. We'll be right back.
The government doesn't always have your health in its best interest. Luckily, we have Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
Only one testosterone booster, Mahler's Aggressive Strength, raises testicular cholesterol levels while increasing gonadotropin, releasing hormone. That in turn turbocharges how much testosterone you can make. In a clinical trial, this resulted in a 347% increase in testosterone, and it won't bottom out your estrogen levels either, so your libido will be in high gear. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aggressive Strength banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and get 10% off today.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
In a world of advanced bodybuilding supplementation, the numbers don't lie. Fact, Iron Mag Labs is among the fastest growing hardcore supplement companies in the world. Fact, when it comes to no-nonsense, cutting-edge products, nobody delivers results like Iron Mag Labs. Fact, the Iron Mag Labs line of innovative formulation has set a new industry standard with products that are helping world-class bodybuilders reach levels they never thought possible. Iron Mag Labs is a proud supporter of bodybuilders everywhere. Discover the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements on the market. Visit IronMagLabs.com today. Research on how colostrum improves athletic performance, muscle growth, health, and vitality is undeniable, but finding a reliable source of colostrum is difficult. Now the Superhuman Nation has Immunodynamics. For over 30 years, Immunodynamics has been regarded as both the standard and the source for consistently providing only first 6-hour colostrum, painstakingly processed by continually refined methods to provide the highest biological activity in the world. For a limited time, when you buy Percoba Extra Edge Colostrum Powder, you'll get a bottle of colostrum lozenges and a Fit and Fresh portable drink mixer free. Use coupon code SHR at checkout. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Immunodynamics banner ad today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. Long awaited to have Adele Moussa back on the show, and I really love this topic. How are you doing, Adele?
I'm doing fine, and I'm happy to be back on the show.
Yeah.
I must say, I would have been back before, but my time budget is really limited these days. But I've been looking forward to this show so eagerly that I actually mistakenly posted last week that you know, we are doing the show on Wednesday last week. So everybody who was fooled by this misinformation, I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, no, I think, and we made fast correction of it as well on the internet. And so
yes, actually,
this is really a brilliant 3-part series that you've come up with. And those of you who don't know who Adele Moussa is, you're missing out on an opportunity to be enlightened daily. No one puts the amount of work into articles and puts the number of articles out related to health, longevity, fitness, strength, conditioning, sexuality, everything on the website Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. It is read by all of the gurus in the health and fitness industry, whether they admit it or not, because no one does what Adele does. And that is, he reads the research and applies critical thinking, doesn't just steal the headline from a press release and run with it. And so there you go. Common nutrient.
Well, no,
good. I'm sorry.
No one makes me flush like you do, Carl.
Oh, that's good. Well, but it's all true. I know that you are the last person to promote yourself,
But it's all true. So there you go. And by the way, Alex Leaf says that he's glad that you're on today. And he just wanted you to know that he's listening live today. Of course, he's not in any class today. So there you go. Common nutrient deficiencies, their health consequences, and how to fix them, part one. We all take vitamins, Adele. Why are there any nutrient deficiencies today?
Well, I guess basically the amount of nutrients in the vitamins is pretty low. And you got all the vitamins covered, yes. But in the multivitamins, some of the rather exotic nutrients we need are dosed pretty low. For example, vitamin A, which is often still considered to be toxic, is dosed pretty low in most multivitamins. And the minerals, all of them are, or at least in most formulas, all of them are dosed pretty low as well. And specifically potassium, for which the FDA doesn't allow to put in a supplement more than 90 milligrams per dose.
Well, and I want to talk about this first of all. Would you agree with this statement that much of the negative research and negative appraisal about multivitamins is not an indictment of the vitamins, but an indictment of the ultra-low recommended daily allowance promoted by most governments today?
Well, I wouldn't say so, because for many of the vitamins, you actually don't really need much more. But on the other hand, there's a general problem with the notion that taking the multivitamin will take off the responsibility to lead a healthy lifestyle. So there are actually studies that have been published which investigated the way or the psychological consequences of taking multivitamin supplements. And one of the established consequences is actually something like, well, I took my multivitamin earlier today, so I will skip on the veggies for lunch and rather have something not just as healthy, at least as long as it does not have too much calories, it is not a problem. And this actually is a real serious problem.
Yeah, because and that's what most people think about everything. Well, I exercise so I can abuse my body. I take hormones so I don't have to worry about this. And vitamins fall into the same class. Now, I find it interesting that you really focused in on potassium here. It seems like every mineral, first calcium, then magnesium, becomes a mission of one group or another to proliferate information about the importance and or underconsumption, and now potassium falls into that, correct?
That's correct, right. And especially for potassium, it's quite drastic. Probably because, A, you don't get it, you don't even get trace amounts, or you get trace amounts, but no real significant amounts from supplements. And for second of all, this is one of the trace minerals which you don't really find in the diet or in parts of the diet that is still recommended as being healthy. For example, the healthy grains, they don't really have high amounts of potassium.
Right.
Potassium is one of the nutrients you really get in large quantities only if you consume large amounts of vegetables, and especially leafy green vegetables. And we all know that, although everybody seems to know these days that this is one of the best foods you can consume, only very few of us actually get enough of them every day.
Yeah. Now, what I want to do is I'm using your article as a template. So anybody who wants to go back and read this through, you have to go to subversity.com and you can look for common nutrient deficiencies, their health consequences, and how to fix them. Part one, potassium deficiency, bone and protein loss, stroke, heart disease, and high mortality. So I think that people probably think that, well, getting enough potassium in my diet really isn't all that dangerous. You've listed quite a few diseases associated with low potassium intake, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So why don't you go ahead and list them for the audience?
One of the main issues actually with low potassium is that you are more likely to develop heart disease and stroke. So if you look at the data, this is probably also the reason that potassium deficiency is also associated with an overall increase in mortality rates, because as of now, heart disease is still the number one killer in the U.S., and it's responsible for one in four deaths So if you don't get enough potassium, and this will increase your risk of cardiovascular disease, and if you look at the figures, there are figures out there that say it is associated with a 36% increase in cardiovascular disease, then this obviously means that your risk of dying before your time, so to say, is increased. And there are similar increases also in the range of 30% to 40% for total stroke risk and ischemic stroke risk. So in general, the lack of potassium, although it is, in my humble opinion, still under-researched, is already established as one of the main risk factors for the number one reason we are dying before we actually would have to leave the this world.
And so potassium, and interestingly enough, Elisa subscribes to the FDA alerts, and recently they sent an alert out telling people who suffer from high blood pressure that this is a lifelong disease and it has to be treated by pharmaceutical drugs exclusively. And it went on to list all the pharmaceutical drugs and that you should never stop taking your pharmaceutical drugs because this is a lifelong disease, hypertension, high blood pressure we're talking about. Doesn't potassium play a role in the development and possibly the reversal of high blood pressure?
It sure does, yes. Potassium, and along with other minerals, actually it's a bit complicated, and in one of the future installments of this series on the subversity in the articles, I'm going to go into more detail, but it's a bit complicated for the show to explain the exact intricacies. In general, it really is, in my humble opinion, potassium, which is the number one issue, not so much as magnesium. Although everybody is complaining about the average American citizen not getting his magnesium intake, the awareness of a lack of magnesium and the number of people who are starting to supplement with magnesium is so high that I would say potassium is actually the real problem, because potassium is the number one antagonist to sodium. So whenever you hear that we are eating or we are consuming too much sodium, we are at the same time also consuming way too little potassium. And this is a quite interesting reference. Usually I'm not really into looking at the paleo diet or at the diet our ancestors are supposed to eat, also because we don't really know what they actually ate.
Right, right.
It's a hypothesis. But for this particular mineral, the difference between the current U.S. intake, which is roughly 2.5 grams, and the estimated intake of our ancestors, which was 10.5 grams, is so huge that I would say this is a good sign that there's something array here.
Interesting. We have to take a break. And also, for those of you listening to the show, when we come back, we will actually have Adele on Skype. I couldn't get him connected before the show, but we're going to get him connected here during the break. So the audio quality will increase as well. Stay tuned. We're going to talk more about the mineral potassium and some of the ways that you can get more potassium, some of the benefits of it. You're listening to Super Human Radio. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. This is part one of a three-part series on nutrient deficiencies and what you can do about them. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's Carl Lenore.
The brainless people at the FDA need to be convinced that arsenic is not good for humans to consume, because the FDA feels a little bit more research needs to be done before we're considered that this particular arsenic is dangerous.
Only on Superhuman Radio.
Right. Only one testosterone booster, Mahler's aggressive strength, raises testicular cholesterol levels while increasing gonadotropin, releasing hormone. That in turn turbocharges how much testosterone you can make in a clinical trial. This resulted in a 347% increase in testosterone, and it won't bottom out your estrogen levels either, so your libido will be in high gear. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aggressive Strength banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and get 10% off today.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise, but that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
In a world of advanced bodybuilding supplementation, the numbers don't lie. Fact, Iron Mag Labs is among the fastest-growing hardcore supplement companies in the world. Fact, when it comes to no-nonsense, cutting-edge products, nobody delivers results like Iron Mag Labs. Fact, the Iron Mag Labs line of innovative formulation has set a new industry standard with products that are helping world-class bodybuilders reach levels they never thought possible. Iron Mag Labs is a proud supporter of bodybuilders everywhere. Discover the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements on the market. Visit IronMagLabs.com today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Superhumans using Percova Extra Edge Colostrum Powder are experiencing dramatic improvements in strength, performance, recovery, and endurance. Benefits that cannot be duplicated by any other supplement. Percova Extra Edge Colostrum Powder will take your game to another level. If you already know how great Percova Extra Edge Colostrum is, you could purchase 4 jars of Extra Edge Colostrum Powder for $200. Use coupon code SHR2. See the Percova banner ad on superhumanradio.com today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay, let's go back to something that we were talking about before the break, and that is when we look at the current U.S. diet, and we have to use the U.S. diet because it's our diet, the U.S. diet that is becoming parasitic, if you will. Other countries are following what we do here, and ultimately they're developing a lot of the same diseases that we have here. Right. When we look at that compared to the paleo diet, everything looks in better form, not just potassium, right?
Well, it's difficult to say whether it looks in better form. At least currently we think this would be the better form. But I must warn you, because in these days, for example, salt is considered bad because we all get way too much salt, or it's rather too readily available to
right.
us. The salt intake in the paleo diet, which was less than 1 gram, would probably not suffice to sustain the physical efforts some of our listeners undergo on a daily or at least every other day basis. So for an athlete, those less than 1 gram of salt would not be enough. So it's difficult to say the paleo diet was ideal because our ancestors consumed them due to the fact that there was nothing else for them available. On the other hand, you are certainly right that in the case of potassium and the ratio of potassium to sodium in the diet, the Paleolithic diet may look healthier. That's right.
But this is a good point. You know, we're all looking for one answer to everything, and it's not. There are various fuels for race cars, depending on the way the engines work, and there are various fuels for people. And this is a great point, because we also know that having too little sodium can also lead to heart problems as well. And if you are exercising regularly, sweating a lot, sitting in the sauna every day like I do, we know that you lose hundreds of times more sodium than other minerals. So if you're not getting that sodium in your diet, you're yet at a different risk now, right?
That's correct. And actually, while you exercise, the the potassium from the cells gets into the bloodstream. So supplementing with potassium while you're exercising is actually something that can make you weak and in the worst case can give you palpitations and other heart problems. So this is also why it is generally not suggested to use plain coconut water as an intra-workout beverage, because it is high in potassium and very low in salt.
Interesting.
And if you want to use it, you have to add extra salt to it.
Wow. And that doesn't even come into conversation, I got to believe.
I think a few people know it, but in general, this is one of the things people don't really think about, because salt is just like cholesterol, a bad, bad thing. And people always think everything that is low in salt must be good for me.
Right, right. So now let's talk about something else. Quite often, sodium or table salt comes in a form that includes chloride.
Right.
You've written about chloride before. I think you're the only person that talks about chloride, to be honest with you. But chloride is just as important in the diet, is it not?
It certainly is, right. It's one of the electrolytes, and it's very important. For one, for the normal function of your heart and for the normal function of all other muscles in your body, and for cell stability and the transport of other nutrients across the cell. And it's also part of hydrochloric acid, obviously, and is thus important for optimal digestive function. It has very many important functions in your body. On the other hand, there are also studies which suggest that chloride and not sodium may be the problem when it is consumed in excess as part of sodium chloride, which is regular table salt. But for everything, actually even plain water is dangerous when you drink too much of it.
Right, right. And I,
funnily, by the way, it is dangerous because it will deplete you of salt.
Right. Hyponatremia, they call it. You know, for those of you who are listening to this and thinking, well, this is great for people who have disease states and problems and they want to be healthier, but I'm an athlete and I don't have any problems. Let me say something to you. This has not been proven, what I'm about to say, or at least well examined, but it is a discussion that Adele and I had a year ago. The way that anabolic steroids improve strength may actually be through electrolyte modulation. The ability for contractile force in a muscle requires several different electrolytes, calcium for calcium channel activation, as well as the relaxation of other muscles and so on, which potassium plays a role in, so does magnesium. So if you don't think paying attention to your electrolyte intake is sexy, because you're just driven by performance, well, get this. It may be the root of why you're not as strong as you can be. What would you say? Let me say one thing. When we look at the effects of certain androgens like trenbolone and DHT based androgens that cause rhythm issues in the heart, we find out that they exacerbate or imbalance calcium and potassium, causing excitability in the heart. So clearly androgens have an effect on electrolytes and muscle function. What would you say to those statements, Adele?
That's absolutely true. And I would actually like to segue away from the hormone connection, not because I think that anabolic steroids are bad in general, but because it is even more fundamental, actually. The muscles actually contract by an influx and efflux of calcium. So this causes a contraction, and this is also why electrolytes are even more important than the hormones for optimal muscle function.
Right.
That being said, there is an interesting anecdote I have to tell, because I've been stupid and done all the mistakes in my past other people do, and I thought, well, salt is bad, potassium is great. So what can I do? I can obviously take some potassium supplements and avoid salt like a plague. And the result obviously was that I got really weak.
Uh-huh.
All my lifts went down. Took me about 1 week or so to notice this. All my lifts went down, and also, what I didn't expect at all, I started to feel bloated, or to look bloated rather.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually retaining more water due to the low salt intake and the high potassium intake, because my body tried to do whatever it could to hold on to the little salt I was consuming at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the exact opposite effect of what I was actually intending to do.
And the worst thing, of course, was, though, that the weakness was, although I didn't notice it that much, also affecting my heart muscle.
Right.
Because the heart, unlike the other muscles in your body, is actually contracting not by a neurological signal from your brain, but rather only the heart rhythm is only controlled by hormonal effects, of course, and also by the optimal amount of electrolytes in your blood.
Right, exactly. And if anybody knows this, bodybuilders have died because they've miscalculated their intake and water and used very, very strong diuretics that quite often are potassium sparing, and their heart stops. Because they get an imbalance, and they have much more potassium in heart tissue, not enough sodium and magnesium and calcium, and the heart just stops. So no, you're absolutely right. Now, interestingly enough, in the FDA's divine wisdom, as you point out, and you call it their infinite wisdom, they only allow a 390 milligram tablet of potassium gluconate has only 99 milligrams of actual potassium in it. Which is nothing, considering that you should be getting 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day in your diet. And if you're not getting it in your diet, is it safe to supplement with more potassium?
Well, actually, it is relatively safe, yes. And I've actually tried to find out why the FDA still adheres to this rule, and I haven't been able to find a real explanation. Because, of course, you could say potassium is potentially dangerous if you take it in very high amounts, but the same is true for all the other supplements. So it is, in general, safe to supplement. I'm somebody who always says, well, try first to get enough potassium from your diet. And there are several other factors that speak for taking or for getting potassium from your diet. But in general, it's safe. Still, I would like to point out why I think it's better not to supplement or only to supplement in low amounts mm-hmm. and to get most of your potassium from the diet. Well, first of all, most of the foods which are high in potassium are also in other ways good for you. So if you are trying to get the most of your potassium from your diet, you are at the same time making an effort to eat healthier. The second thing I would like to mention is that potassium in foods always comes in an alkaline form. So if you get potassium from your foods, this will at the same time have an alkalizing effect at your body. Now I already see some people shaking their heads and saying, well, this doesn't matter. But there are actually quite good studies that show that this alkaline load from potassium citrate, either in supplemental form or in the form it occurs in most vegetables, is actually buffering the acid load from a high-protein diet. And this does not only mean that it protects your kidneys, this does also mean that you can use the protein better mm-hmm. and you get a higher net protein retention, which will translate into higher muscle gains.
Now people are listening. Now, interestingly enough, we talked a moment ago about some of the influences, the potential influences of potassium on mortality, but there are actually... there is research out there that shows that insufficient potassium intake is actually associated directly with 29% higher all-cause mortality risk. Can you talk about that briefly and the other points there? Because then you also point out that exercise isn't going to save you from low potassium, right?
Right, of course not, no. So, the all-cause mortality, I already mentioned that mostly this is due to the effect on cardiovascular disease risk. As I said, if cardiovascular disease risk is the highest mortality risk, then it's quite obvious that there should be an association between low potassium intake and cardiovascular disease risk and, of course, all-cause mortality risk. I also mentioned the stroke risk already.
Right.
And then there's something that is related to what I've said just before. So a low potassium intake is also related to a lower bone mineral density. And this is mostly due to its effect on other minerals. So if you have a low potassium intake, your body will use calcium for the alkalizing effect. And this will in turn increase the leakage of calcium from your bones, and this will make your bones brittle. There are also a couple of very good studies which show that the provision of potassium citrate as a supplement or in form of vegetables
will actually have a more potent beneficial effect on the bone health of premenopausal and postmenopausal women than calcium supplements.
All doctors ever prescribe is calcium supplements for people, which is throwing the problem even off more, because one of the things that I found interesting about the plate that you put up about the average American diet, that the average American diet provides about 900 milligrams a day of calcium, and then doctors tell women to take another 1,000 without even assessing their diet. They're already getting enough calcium in their diet quite often.
Right, of course. And this is specifically true for most of our listeners. Because I know most of you are probably supplementing with either whey protein or casein protein or both. And you can get 200 milligrams of calcium from just one serving of protein shake.
Right, right. And some of us are drinking raw milk. I mean, so right. We're getting more than enough. Now, interestingly enough, the effect of acidity and alkalinity on protein actually is what's influencing. So if you were having low potassium intake and on a very high protein diet, this would cause more calcium to be released from the bones to buffer the blood, right?
Right, that's correct. And it will also cause a greater loss of protein in the urine, because this is another way, obviously, you can reduce the acidity by increasing the nitrogen excretion in the urine. And there is an interesting study which is also related to the study to the studies which showed an increased bone mineral density or an increased incorporation of calcium into the bone as a result of potassium supplementation. There's a similar study also done in postmenopausal women, of whom we all know that they are not just lacking bone mineral density but also muscle mass. And for them, there is a good study which shows that 4 to 6 grams increasing the intake of potassium to 4 to 6 grams per day from either foods or supplements led to almost 90% reduction in urinary nitrogen excretion. Mm. So they lost less protein in their urine, and obviously this also means that there is more protein left to be used for better uses in the body, like protein synthesis.
Right. Now, I want to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the interplay between socioeconomic status and potassium levels. We're talking right now with Adele Moussa. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. We're talking about nutrient deficiencies, more importantly, potassium. And when we come back, we'll pick it up on the other side. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Highlighting the hypocrisy in government, one meal at a time.
The USDA and the FDA going after small family farms. They're telling these farmers that by selling direct to end users like you and I, because they're outside the jurisdiction of the USDA and the FDA, the USDA says it's dangerous to be buying from these farmers. Really? And we're all thriving buying from these farmers, but the USDA and the FDA said, no, you're wrong. You may not think that because you're not getting sick that something's wrong, but we know there's something wrong.
Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to gum disease. It does not contain fluoride, detergent, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good people will comment about it. Right now you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD and neither should you.
Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. AgeForce introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now Patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
By now, everyone knows I'm a big proponent of dairy. But as we all know, not all dairy is created equal. Learn more about a form of dairy made available to us that is raw, organic, grass-fed, grass-finished, low-heat pasteurized, and cultured with probiotics, without the offensive beta-casein protein believed to be 13 times more toxic than gluten. Check out superhumandairy.com to learn more, or go to superhumanradio.com and click the green-fed dairy banner ad today.
Taking vitamin D without taking the MK7 form of K2 can lead to unwanted tissue calcification. A growing body of evidence shows cardiovascular and bone benefits from taking vitamin D and K2 together. Getting MK7 from the diet is virtually impossible. Doctor-formulated Leaner Living's K2 plus D3 product is free of soybean oil and GMOs, blended into a potent olive oil base that is the dynamic duo of fat-soluble vitamins. Save 10% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Leaner Living banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Soldier Boy, I tell you. Hey, I got the new damn for y'all called the Soldier Boy.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're talking about nutrient deficiencies. We've covered a lot of the symptoms and dangers of potassium and chloride intake. Now let's talk a little bit about how this cuts across socioeconomic lines. We always hear about people who are economically underserved being at greater risk because of the propensity to eat fast food and processed foods. Does it play out that way also with potassium?
Yeah, probably. Because actually potassium is one of the nutrients fast food and processed foods are most depleted of. So there's relatively little potassium in the average fast food and convenient food diet. And unfortunately, there is still a certain tendency for people from the lower economic circles to consume this diet instead of a whole foods diet. Although, if you don't shop your whole foods at Whole Foods, but just buy them at the farmer's market or buy them at the regular supermarket, you don't really necessarily have to pay much more. You just have to spend a little more time on buying foods and on preparing them than if you buy the processed and the convenient foods. Especially the latter are actually often more expensive than fresh foods when you prepare them yourself, or the meals, the final meals will be more expensive. So personally, I think this is not really an issue of money, but rather one of education. And this is also something you can really see if you look at the data. If you compare the potassium intake by mean income, the people with the highest income are much closer to those with the lowest income than if you make comparison according to education. Mm. And you compare those with the highest education to those with the lowest education. And this makes a much higher difference, or much, much greater difference.
Now, I remember listening to a gentleman speak at a function who said that commercial agriculture uses sodium in the fields, and so that the sodium is replenished, but it's for a convenience. It's something about when they cut the produce, the sodium helps to seal something up, but they don't replace the potassium in the soil. So, are we seeing less and less potassium in the quote unquote good potassium foods out there?
No, that's a myth. I've been writing about this before. There are very, very few nutrients of which we really get less today in the modern produce than in the classic produce.
Okay.
There's rather a difference that there's something in addition in there we don't really want.
And I think you're confusing sodium and phosphorus.
Maybe I am. Yes, it's
because this is one of the things that is in many fertilizers. So the phosphorus content increases, and it's not really true that the average food today has lower nutrient content than before. If this is the case, it's also not really due to the way it is produced, but rather due to the certain types of foods we select, for example, because sometimes they are the nutrient dense ones. They don't taste as good,
uh-huh.
or they don't look as good, or they don't grow as good, or are not that resistant to certain pesticides or to certain natural enemies like bugs.
Mm-hmm. Now, those out there who are listening to the show, going, "Well, I don't have to worry about this because I eat." Pick a diet template. I don't care what it is. I'm a vegan. I don't have to worry about this. I eat a lot of, but the reality is that those who eat some sort of food template are at the greatest risk of these types of nutrient deficiencies, right?
In general, those people who eat the most restricted diets are at the greatest risk, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
So for potassium, I wouldn't say a vegan is really at risk of not getting enough potassium. But a vegan is at the same time at risk for many, many other deficiencies. For example, another of the top nutrient deficiencies I've been writing about already, choline,
right.
would be something vegans don't get as much of. But there's something else, actually. So on the one hand, we have those very restricted diets with certain food patterns where you are in a generally higher risk of getting into problems. But if you look at the rather sane versions of most of the diets, which are currently recommended, they all have a couple of things in common. And those things are a limitation of refined starches, no added sugars, no processed foods, a limited intake of certain fats, an emphasis on whole plant foods with or without lean meats, fish, poultry, and seafood. So this common denominator is actually what we here at Superhuman Radio and I personally at the Subversity always suggest, which is eat a whole foods diet
right.
with a limited amount of processed healthy grains and starches, and make sure you get your leafy green vegetables and all types of vegetables and also fruits in limited amounts at least.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Let's talk a little bit about the types of foods that people should be eating, and let's talk about some target intake so that people have some sort of prescriptive feel for what they can do to help this.
Right. So I would like to start actually with the target intake, which is, I have mentioned before, the paleo diet is supposed to have had 10 grams of potassium. I would say this is a little too much. I wouldn't say it would hurt you if you get, especially not if you get this from foods, but if you try to get 10 grams every day, I think most people will get into problems to do this. So this is also quite interesting. The FDA suggested intake, the RDA, is actually 4.7 grams per day. And if you think about the fact that you may not even get 100 grams, the whole 100 milligrams of potassium in a supplemental form is rather hilarious, I would say.
Right, right.
So personally, I think this is a good starting point. So if you end up somewhere between 4.5 and 6 grams of potassium per day, I think you're perfectly fine. Whether more is actually more beneficial, I would doubt that. So this would be a good way to start, also because how beneficial and how good it is for you will also depend on the amount of other minerals you consume.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So try to shoot for the 4.5 to 6 grams, and there are actually many, many good sources you can use. For example, there are fruits like apricots, bananas, we all know that, dates, figs, kiwis, melons, oranges, peaches, pears, and prunes. You can consume, obviously, with fruit. I wouldn't say fruit is a real problem because most people won't really manage to overeat on it. But I wouldn't try to get all my potassium from fruits, although fruits are also a good source of potassium.
I made the mistake of eating an entire bag over the course of 2 days of Turkish dried apricots. They were so delicious. I wonder, I think that the bag was 1 pound of apricots. Dried
uh-huh.
apricots. I wonder how many milligrams of potassium I got from that entire bag over the course of 2 days.
I don't know, but sometimes I've realized that sometimes those foods with the nutrients you really need, they taste the best.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe you actually need it.
Potassium,
because apricots are actually one of the best sources of potassium.
Yeah. Yeah. Vegetables, artichokes, but there's not much to an artichoke unless you pressure cook it. Then you can eat the whole entire thing.
Right. So artichokes are probably not the best source, but if you eat it, they are relatively high in potassium. You're right. Right.
Right.
So you can eat all sorts of beans. Then actually all the green vegetables, they contain considerable amounts of potassium. Potatoes are also a very good source of potassium, both the sweet ones as well as the white ones. Mm. Obviously, also processed forms of potatoes still contain potassium, although I wouldn't try to get all my potassium from French fries. Possible, but maybe not the best way to eat. Tomatoes are relatively rich in potassium. Obviously, a tomato is mostly water. So as usual with tomatoes, a good source would be a tomato paste or a tomato sauce, where you get it in concentrated form. Then winter squash, yams, and zucchini, obviously. Also a green vegetable, obviously. Other good sources, which are not directly vegetables or fruit. I know not everyone wants to eat only vegetables and fruits and maybe meat, is chocolate, obviously. Chocolate is a good source of potassium, but also of magnesium, which is quite interesting. And maybe also part of the reason chocolate is good for the
mm-hmm,
heart.
Mm-hmm.
Then cacao, which is the basis for chocolate. Milk is also quite a good source for potassium, at least in a non-vegetable category, so to say.
Right.
Peanuts, interestingly, and other nuts. Also peanut butter, if somebody loves peanut butter is also high in potassium. Then you can use certain salt substitutes which contain potassium, but I would warn you. So you can use them to increase your general potassium intake. That's correct. But don't make the mistake and use those instead of a supplement,
right,
because they contain potassium chloride. And this is a form of potassium which does not have this alkalizing effect we've been talking about before, and it does not have the beneficial effect on protein synthesis or on protein retention. It does not have the beneficial effect, at least not to the same extent, on bone health, and I seriously doubt that it has have the same beneficial effect on your heart health as the quote-unquote regular potassium in fruits and vegetables and other sources.
Let me tell you a food that I've fallen in love with and that I think is a great replacement if you get tired of sweet potatoes, and that is plantain. But it's got to be unripened, the green banana. The Latin countries love this. It is a great replacement for potatoes in the meal, and it has 5 milligrams of potassium per gram. So if you have a 3-ounce serving, that's 500 milligrams of potassium.
Right. I just checked. You're totally right. 5 milligrams, right?
Yeah, and it's delicious. I love plantain. It's so good. So, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our last commercial break, and then we will summarize and wrap up the discussion. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup. Long time waiting for this, and there's 2 more installments to go. You're not going to want to miss any of them. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your destination for the latest in health information. Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
1-2 punch for muscle growth is increased pump and increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workout the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing. The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced Phytoform. Phytoform has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. Age Force introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now Patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
The UK is known for its queen, Big Ben, and fish and chips. Well, move over. Here's the UK's strongest pro-hormone, Extreme Mass. Extreme Mass will give you a significant amount of muscle and strength. Gains of up to 10 kilograms in a four-week cycle. You'll see an increase in libido, vascularity, and aggression. Shatter your personal bests in the gym while on Extreme Mass. Save 10% off. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Extreme Mass banner and use coupon code MASS10.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The Triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the Triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of Triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Oh, man, did he say... No, he stopped right at the right time. Okay. Sounded like he was about to curse that guy. I don't know who he is. Anyway, listen, I want to mention something else that I had a suspicion of, and I just did a little digging around, Adele. There are a lot of people today who are suffering from neuropathies that are not related to diabetes. These are people who have relatively low... ranges of both A1C and blood sugar, fasted blood sugar, but yet they're developing neuropathies in their feet and in their hands. And I had a discussion with a good doctor friend of mine about this, and you know, it's baffling where these neuropathies are coming from. So at first I started to suspect possible exposure to certain toxins that could be maybe causing some demyelination in the extremities. So I just did a real brief cursory summary. Autonomic neuropathy is a symptom of electrolyte imbalances led by low blood potassium levels for long periods of time. It includes burning in the feet and hand, tingling in the feet and hand, numbness in the extremities, all because of not having enough potassium in your blood.
Right. There are some other things. For example, this is something people usually don't talk or don't like to talk about, but incontinency. So if you can't hold your water, this is also often, especially in women, it's often a cause. It's often related to low potassium levels.
Well, okay. So now let me go out on a limb here, right? So you know that I have this whole penchant about understanding why so many people snore today.
Yeah.
And I've had discussions both on the air and off the air with Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, who, by the way, before he started studying ketogenics, was studying obstructive sleep apnea. And I said to him, I suspect that there is a vagus nerve effect in the abundant number of men who snore today. Because yeah, a lot of these men also have other symptoms like tinnitus. Their voice will break from time to time, tickle in the throat that causes coughing, as well as some irregular heartbeats. And I said, I have this suspicion that something is happening to the vagus nerve. Now,
My original suspicion was leaky gut, the vagus nerve runs along the stomach, the contents of the stomach gets in and starts to erode the myelin and disrupt the vagus nerve. But now I'm wondering if ultra-low intake of potassium for long periods of time that could cause neuropathies in the extremities could also cause some sort of neural damage or interruption in larger nerve groups like the vagus nerve. And then could potassium be one of the factors influencing the rate of snoring today?
Could possibly be, but I would like to get back to the diabetes relation, which is obviously also related to the snoring and to sleep apnea. But if you look at the intricate relationships between potassium and insulin, you will see that first of all, you need insulin to drive potassium into the cells.
Mm.
So you can be potassium deficient at the cellular level if you are insulin resistant, because if insulin doesn't get the glucose shuttled in, it will also not function in shuttling the potassium in.
Interesting.
So you can end up having normal or even high potassium levels in the blood, but low potassium levels in the tissue. And I suppose this is also part of the reason diabetics develop those neuropathies in consequence or not really of potassium deficiency in the blood. Because if you have low potassium in the blood, you usually have real problems with potassium already.
Right.
So they have a low potassium level in the cells. And this is also interesting because potassium is intricately also involved in the release of insulin in the pancreas. This is a mechanism a bit similar to the electrolyte functions in the muscle. And actually, so if there is no potassium, there is no insulin release from the pancreatic beta cells. On the other hand, in a hypokalemic state, so if you have too much potassium in the blood, this will lead to an increased insulin release. So this is just one of these vicious circles. If you're insulin resistant, you won't get the potassium to work. And when the potassium doesn't work, you won't produce enough insulin.
Wow. That is amazing. That's amazing. Okay, so now, we're running low on time. Let's go ahead and revisit chloride for a minute, and then we'll just kind of re-summarize the target goal of potassium intake. And also, if you have any of these ailments or symptoms of potassium insufficiency, can it be corrected quickly, or is it something that takes a long time to correct? So go ahead. Let's start there.
Well, first of all, I think it can be corrected relatively quickly if it is not at the tissue level. So if it's at the tissue level, it will probably take some time, but in general, you can correct it relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the chloride issue, which is actually correlated or related, directly related to the way you best do this, is if you think you can't get enough potassium from your diet, I would not recommend using potassium chloride supplements. As I mentioned before, those are not the ones which are sort of bioidentical because they provide the alkalizing effect as well. So instead of potassium chloride, I would look for potassium citrate supplements or alternatively potassium bicarbonate. It tastes acidic, so it is sour, the potassium citrate, but don't worry, it will still have an alkalizing effect. The potassium bicarbonate, on the other hand, it tastes really bitter and is not exactly what you want to take in powdered form, I would say.
Right.
But in a cap, it's okay. So this would be a strategy to get your potassium levels back up relatively fast. On the other hand, you just heard that to get it into the cell, you need a certain level of insulin. So maybe it may be a good idea not to eat exactly zero carbs. And this is probably also one of the reasons fruits are actually very good in repleting potassium levels. You have all heard about bananas being consumed by sportsmen to replete magnesium and potassium. This is also because they contain sugar, and sugar is necessary to release insulin, or will trigger an insulin release, and will help you to replete the cellular potassium levels.
Interesting. And I guess if you're taking a potassium supplement, you probably should take it with a fruit juice or something like that.
With a fruit juice would be a good idea, at least with a meal, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Now, since potassium present in the blood could potentially affect your ability to produce muscle energy, is there a best time to take potassium?
I wouldn't take it right after the workout, as I said.
I wouldn't take it right before the workout. I would take it with meals. Probably best not with the post-workout meal, obviously. Pre-workout, I think it wouldn't really matter. But it's a matter of the amount. So you can have a relatively low amount compared to the amount of sodium in your meal directly after the workout. But I wouldn't, for example, eat a banana and consume an additional potassium supplement without at least having something salty to eat.
Yeah, interesting. Very, very interesting. This is really a good discussion. Now, the next installment, we're going to talk about yet another nutrient deficiency. And then the third installment, you're going to also talk about some intricacies of all this that'll kind of put it all together, right?
Right. I'm currently working. I'm trying to work out whether I can find out if there is I wouldn't say an optimal, but a good ratio between calcium, magnesium, potassium, and phosphorus, and salt, or natrium, or sodium, as you say,
right,
my American friends.
Right.
Because they all act together, and if you actually can't really say what's optimal without knowing the intake of the others.
Right.
As I pointed out before, if you look, for example, at the diet our ancestors ate, it was really high in potassium. On the other hand, it was also high in magnesium, and there's certain antagonism. So you could say that by taking both in exuberant amounts, this would reduce the net effect of both of them, so that you can get along in modern times with less of both, just as well or maybe even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And if you get your electrolyte levels proper, if you get your insulin levels proper, so that cellular levels of electrolytes are being affected properly, you will see an increase in strength output. I'm telling you that. I'm telling you that right now. So
just one thing I would like to mention.
Yes.
I've mentioned coconut water before. And I think one of the reasons that this is a particular problem in the U.S., and although we here in Germany eat very similar as you do, we drink very differently. For us, mineral water is the standard drink.
I love it. I know.
And if I'm looking at the most basic water I can buy here in store, it's not exactly high in potassium. That's not something you will get from the mineral water in high amounts unless you buy a special mineral water. But you can get about 200 milligrams of calcium in most of the standard mineral waters here per liter. Obviously, this will make a large contribution to your intake. And I've been talking to a couple of readers before on Facebook who complained when I wrote in an article that it is not difficult to get your 1 gram of calcium from the diet. And I thought about, well, if you look at the amount in foods, it can actually be difficult. But for myself, for example, if I'm drinking 3 liters of water a day,
right,
I already get 600 milligrams of calcium. Then I drink a protein shake with 200 milligrams, so I'm at 800 milligrams, and we'll actually have to watch that I'm not getting too much calcium.
Right. And you know what? I love mineral water as well, and it's a habit I picked up when I first traveled to Europe, well, actually to Yugoslavia at the time. And I happened to buy a German brand. Now, you know what's funny? It's a German brand of mineral water, but maybe it's not sold in Germany, because you know how they do that. They make things look imported. But it's called Gerstlinger or Gerstlinger.
It's Gerolsteiner.
Yeah. I can never say it.
Yeah, that's the number one brand, yeah. It's really famous, and it's actually sold in Germany as well. It's expensive, and you don't really have to buy the expensive stuff here, but it's a good mineral water. You're right.
Yeah, I like it a lot, and it's one of the few that comes in glass bottles, because most of them come in plastic now, too. Listen, this is a great discussion. We've got installment number 2 next week, and then I think we skip a week, and then the third week or something like that, but we'll keep everybody posted on the rest of these episodes. This is going to be a great series that will have impact on your health and your performance. You're not going to want to miss a single episode. Adele, thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me again.
Of course. A pleasure. Stay with me. Again, Adele's website is Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. You can go there every day and feel your brain getting larger. Also, we want to thank Dr. Mark Ternopolsky. Why can't I pronounce his name? Ternopolsky. T
T-A-R-N-O-P, I can't read my own handwriting, Tarnopolsky, from McMaster University, talking about how exercise can make your skin younger. Ladies, before you go out and buy that $300 cosmetic, maybe you should just start doing more cardio, because apparently it'll make your skin more youthful. All right, we'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio, and thank you for listening.
Previously on Superhuman Radio.
So these people, they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, your cholesterol is kind of high, and you fall into this group here, and under the new guidelines, we need to prescribe you a statin drug. And the person doesn't go, I don't want a statin drug. They don't even go, let me look into it, doc, before you write that prescription. They don't say anything. They go, oh, okay, and they take it.
Carl gives advice about how to talk to your doctor.
In what other area of your life do you take what someone else says that's selling you a service for gospel truth? You pull into the mechanic, and you know all you need is your tire change. And the mechanic says, but you also need a complete engine overhaul. And you go, all right, what's it going to cost? $3,000. Okay, I guess you got to do it. No, you go, I don't need an engine overhaul. Just change my tire so I can get out of here. But no one talks to their doctors like that.
Keep listening to Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore, weekdays at noon.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.